You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano. The program is broadcast across Australia courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchos, without rulers. Not without rules. What gives rulers, the buffoons of Washington, the turds in the Washington punch bowl, the ability to make, you know, decisions for billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. How simple. You don't need a PhD. You don't need to go to university. You don't even need to go to primary school. I mean, people in the 18th and 19th century didn't go to school, and they were able to grasp the concepts that most of the problems we face as individuals, as communities, are directly related to inequalities in power and wealth. The greater their inequality, the greater the problems that are faced by the many. All right. Now, I never cease to be amazed. I mean, I've been broadcasting here at Community Radio 3CR, the Anarchist World, this week in various formats for the last 48 years. And I've come to the conclusion that a lot of listeners, well, not a lot of listeners, that a lot of people in the virtual world believe if it's on the internet, it's true. It's a fact. I mean, I've even been told about a site about little green men on Mars. Then I've had people show me the giants roaming the earth. And then we've had, obviously, you've got the usual anti-vaxxers. You've got Adolf's, you know, spawn out there, you know, jumping up and down about white Australia and the white race. It just goes on and on. And if it's on the net, it's true. It's fascinating, isn't it? That we've now reached a situation where we're creating silos where people are fed the same information. Well, you wouldn't call it information. I don't know what you'd call it. The same drivel in various formats, and because it appears on the internet, it's somehow true. It's a fact. Now, I know people talk about the internet being some great democratic, you know, network. But the reality is that the platform which disseminate that information are monopolies, duopolies. There's only a very limited number of platforms. And the fact is that you and me, we're the product. I mean, traditionally, we used to go and buy products. Now, we've become the product. Our information has become the product. And for that, we get the opportunity to surf the net and find out all these things that have no nil relevance to reality. I assume that's the great thing about living at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, that reality is no longer relevant. That's why we have a turd in the Washington punch bowl. That's why we see dictators and authoritarians around the world jumping up and down, telling us how the other is our enemy. Well, they enrich themselves because we're the product. We are that product. Maybe the internet initially was supposed to be a democratizing force, but it hasn't turned out that way. Because the platforms aren't owned by us. The platforms are owned by a minuscule minority. And those platforms income is directly linked to the amount of advertising revenue, the amount of eyeballs on those particular sites. And obviously, the more outrageous the site, the greater the eyeballs, because we get into this virtual anxiety situation where, oh, it's there. It must be real. And then to make matters worse, obviously, we've got this concept of so-called artificial intelligence, bots running around, manipulating the situation. And so you get people talking the most ridiculous garbage and, more importantly, believing the most ridiculous garbage, but it has nothing to do with reality and facts. And when you find yourself in that type of world where reality and facts are irrelevant, are unimportant, well, then people are ripe for manipulation. And what we're seeing is an increasing number of people being manipulated to support various ideas and causes which are basically manufactured in order to increase profitability for a minuscule minority. So no wonder Mr. Musk can look forward to becoming the world's first trillionaire. We've got people like, you know, who believe that everything, if it's on the net, it must be true. Let's move on. Now, talk about a glass jaw. Now, I have been taken to task for calling the gentleman in Washington a buffoon. Now, I was talking to a critical comedian recently, and he pointed out to me the importance of the buffoon in medieval society. The buffoon's role was to keep the king's feet on the ground, to remind them, irrespective of the power they were able to wield, they were human. And they were liable to experience all the issues that human beings experience, including death. So, what can I do? Will I call him the buffoon in Washington? And then I thought, as he's building a new ballroom, I understand, not that I've been invited, but maybe you'll get an invitation, and there'll be a lot of punch bowls when they open up the new ballroom. Maybe I should describe him as the turd in the Washington punch bowl. Now, I understand the turd in the Washington punch bowl is a very litigious person. And although he is the head of the United States of America, including the armed forces, he likes to sue media outlets for defaming him. Could you imagine that? All you've got to look at is the tweets that he puts out to understand that when we talk about defamation, the turd in the Washington punch bowl is the king of defamers. But now we see the BBC being caught up in the net. How extraordinary. How extraordinary. And that's the beauty when facts are no longer relevant. When you can have a peace accord in Gaza and the atrocities continue, food and medicines continue to be used as a bargaining chip, reconstruction is not even on the horizon, but somehow we have a peace accord and everything has been sorted out. Extraordinary. Extraordinary. It really is. And that's what happens when you think that everything on the internet is true. Let's move on. COP30, you know, the climate change conference in Brazil. Now, I say to people, don't worry, be happy. Well, I'm being facetious, obviously. Now, we are seeing the turd in the Washington punch bowl's allies in Australia discussing getting rid of net zero by 2050, okay? I'll be dead before then, obviously, and I assume many of our listeners will. But we're going to get rid of net zero. Well, the coalition's going to get rid of net zero because of high electricity prices. Now, even an idiot like me, you know, even an idiot like me knows that if we don't have net zero, or if we don't aim for net zero, temperatures will increase. As temperatures increase, there'll be more damage to cities and towns and people because of the climate emergency. But more importantly, temperatures will increase. And if temperatures increase, it gets hot. So what do? You turn on the air conditioner. So what happens to your electricity prices? It goes up. Now, what a load of garbage. It's a little bit like seeing your demented grandmother on the railway track. And you know there's going to be a train coming down that track in the next 15 minutes. But you're drinking a cup of coffee and you're in the sunshine and you're just enjoying yourself and you think, is Granny really worth it? Is she really worth it, me getting up and taking off the railway track? It's the same thing with the net zero garbage, you know, getting rid of the net zero target. It's a target. Doesn't mean you're going to get there in 2050. But it's the same thing. Do we do like the turd in the Washington punch bowl does and tear up the Paris Agreement, claims the climate emergency is the world's great, well, it's a hoax, a great hoax, his own words, and we follow the master? Well, it looks like the Nationals have, and I expected that, but it looks like now the Liberal Party is going to turf out the net zero policy. And what's even more fascinating is that a significant proportion of Australians, over 30%, think it's all a hoax, that it doesn't exist. And you think to yourself, where does all this come from? Where does it all come from? It all comes from those little silos which we create in order to maintain our ideological biases. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. No wonder every time I wake up in the morning I think, is it worthwhile? And then I say to myself, obviously it's worthwhile. Because we've always had these type of issues in the world today. I don't remember personally. Remember they used to burn witches? Homosexuality was illegal. I remember that. I'm old enough to remember that. You know, and the list goes on and on. Things do change. But they change, and this is where it becomes a little bit complex. They change because of people taking action. They don't change because people surf the net and they've got 100,000 followers. Well, you can make some money out of it, monetize it, obviously. If you've got 100,000 followers, you can get a little bit of advertising, can't you? But the fact is, change comes by people taking action. Now, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the dismissal of the Whitlam-led Labor government. And I'm sure most Australians would have shrugged their shoulders and said, so what? Now, we had a small ceremony on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House to mark that event, but we weren't there to lionise the government of the day between 72 and 75. We weren't there to lionise Gough Whitlam, but we were there to lionise the tens of thousands of Australians who in the 60s and the 70s demanded change. It was that push from below which created the conditions which allowed the Whitlam-led Labor government to be elected into power. And the difference between the Whitlam-led Labor government, irrespective of its shortcomings, and obviously every government has its shortcomings, and I'm sick of tired and people saying, oh, they didn't do this or they didn't do that. But the reality is, every day you wake up in Australia today, one of the reforms, and there are over 250 reform agendas, radical reform agendas, pushed through Parliament, although it didn't have a majority in the House of in the Senate at any time. It held a double dissolution election in 1974 to be able to pass that legislation. Every time you go to a public hospital and get free treatment, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. Every time you go to a general practice and you get bulk billed, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. Every time a single parent receives a benefit, a Social Security benefit, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. Land rights legislation, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. Law reform, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. And you just listening to me, community radio, courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government, created, bypassed the states, created to serve as an alternative and news source to the Murdoch media, which did everything in its power to ensure that the Whitlam Labor government was dismissed. Now, this government was about wealth redistribution. And that's the key. Wealth redistribution. Nothing happens while we surf the net. I can like as many things as I like, but so what? And nothing happens when I write to a newspaper, put up an article on the net. Nothing. It's action, extra parliamentary action, which forces Parliament to introduce radical reforms. For example, one of the issues which brought down the Whitlam-led Labor government was its inability to buy back the farm as far as natural resources are concerned. Now, think about it. Think about the extraordinary wealth that we as a community would be able to share if as a community we owned those very resources which produce the minerals, coal, gas, bauxite, uranium, you name it, irrespective of how noxious it is. Think how rich this country would have been if we'd been able to buy back the farm. Great failure. Great failure. Extraordinary, isn't it, when you think about it, how things could have changed. In 2025, we find ourselves in an ideological vacuum. You like that? An ideological vacuum. A moral vacuum. An intellectual vacuum. Because obviously everything on the internet is true, isn't it? It's a fact. So we find ourselves in a situation in 2025 where we see some of the most reactionary ideas taking hold in the community. This is nothing new. But what is new is the fact that so many people listening to this program somehow think that the other is the problem. We now have political groupings being established and growing that talk about white Australia, the death of the white race, and the list goes on and on. Adolf Spawn around the country. Extraordinary. We have people thinking that, you know, a little bit of positive assistance for people in a difficult circumstance is somehow counterproductive. They're all leaners, aren't they? anybody on a social security benefit is a leader. They should be out there enjoying their superannuation benefits, shouldn't they? Think about it. See, this is the beauty about living in Australia in 2025. This is the beauty, right? You got a good job. You get good superannuation stashed away. You do your 35, 40 years of, you know, wage slavery. And then you have the opportunity to enjoy your life unless you die from some preventable disease or some aged care facility takes all your superannuation benefits. And you think that once you reach that retirement age that you're able to begin your life. How extraordinary. Sacrifice in the majority of your life in order to build up a superannuation nest so you can pay for your own old age. How things have changed. And if there's one lesson I've learnt since I've been an activist, and I began being an activist in 1968, one thing I've learnt is how the baby boomer generation has lost its way. Now, currently, if you're living in Melbourne, there is a production of Hair, you know, the 1968 Radical Theatre reproduction. Obviously, most of the people going are elderly, trying to relive their youth. But the fact is that it's that very generation which has placed the planet and the people on the planet in the situation we find ourselves in, where we have eaten away, destroyed our children and our grandchildren's future. It's easy to say, if you've got resources, that you can give your kids a bit of a helping hand to get their first home. But the fact is, it's not those baby boomers that got good jobs in the public service and espoused radical rhetoric while making hay in a private investment for private profit environment, investing their money in areas which increase the wealth of a minority and getting a taxation benefit at the same time, while seeing the planet choke on increasing carbon dioxide emissions. I know it sounds melodramatic, doesn't it? It sounds really melodramatic, doesn't it, when you think about it? How melodramatic. But that's the facts. Not what you read on the net. But that's the facts. The facts is we have swollen lock, stock and barrel the myth that it's only the private sector which can run the country. And we are now paying the price for four decades of privatisation and globalisation and corporatisation and deregulation. Every day there's another story about the early childhood development sector, the aged care sector, the healthcare sector, and the list goes on and on, about the deficiencies and how they've been corporatised, taken over by a handful of companies who've got a direct railway line into the treasury, where they just load up the train and come out the other side. It's just extraordinary. So, am I depressed? No. Am I disillusioned? No. Am I cynical? No. And I'll tell you why not. Because there are still people, both young and old, who believe change is possible, that egalitarian change is possible, that political change is possible. It's not easy. But if there aren't people who are willing to put their neck out and demand those changes and raise them in the public arena, even on the internet, then nothing will ever change. It's a little bit like, say, you're a worm and you live in the earth and you're turning over the earth all your life, and then the next generation, and occasionally a little worm pops its head out of the earth and looks up at the sky and says, wow, there's a whole new world out there. There are all these new possibilities out there. I may be burnt by the sun, but there are possibilities, and I'll take advantage of the situation. And we're exactly the same situation. You know, you take advantage of the situation you find yourself in order not just to enrich yourself and your family and your friends and your colleagues and support the government of the day, but get involved in struggles to ensure that wealth and power is both redistributed. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Now let's move on to something maybe a little bit more interesting. Oh, something we can do something about. Why is the 11th of November important? Why is the 11th of November important? There are four significant dates in Australian post-colonial history that makes the 11th of November important. One, on the 11th of November, 1854, the Ballarat Reform League was formed. This was the organisation behind the Eureka Rebellion, behind the profound changes that occurred, not just in Victoria but the rest of Australia, as a consequence of the Eureka Rebellion, and changes which continue to occur as a consequence of the Eureka Rebellion in 1854. And those who are interested in celebrating Eureka Day, that's Wednesday, the 3rd of December, I invite you to join us for a Fool's Day of festivities, beginning at 4 a.m. at Eureka Park. Now, I know it's a big park, but it's the corner of Eureka and Stall Street. It's the corner, it'll be what, the south-east corner of the park. It's where the cannons are mounted. Join us 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. for a dawn ceremony. The celebrations are carried out in conjunction by the Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion Celebrations Group, which the Anarchist Media Institute is part of, as well as Ballarat and Western Region Trades Hall. After that, we have a communal breakfast. Please bring food and drinks to share. That's at Eureka Park, the same spot. At 10 a.m, we meet at Bakery Hill, at the very site where the Eureka Oath was taken. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. We will be handing out 6 Eureka Australia medals on the day to activists who most likely you've never heard of. We're not interested in the tall poppies. We're interested in those people who've devoted their lives to improving the lot of humanity without ever been publicly acknowledged, and you'll meet many of these people on the day. Then about 11:30 a.m. we gather at the old Ballarat Cemetery in Ballarat at the mass grave of the Eureka Rebels. About half are buried who died on that day are buried in the mass grave to pay our respects. Then we'll go to Trades Hall at about 1 p.m. that's in Camp Street in Ballarat, Trades Hall, for a light lunch courtesy of the Ballarat Trades Hall. And then after that, there will be a presentation at 3 p.m. at the Eureka Centre. I'll be doing a presentation in front of the Eureka flag about the history of the Eureka flag. And that night we've booked 20. So there's not many seats booked. So if you want to come to the dinner, the Eureka dinner that night, it'll be at the Queen's Head Hotel. So if you want to come, you need to book now. It doesn't cost you anything to book. Ring us on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489. And if you can't make it, the Eureka Dawn Ceremony will be broadcast live on Community Radio 3CR between 4am and 6am. And obviously I'll talk more about that later on. So that's the first date to remember on the 11th of November. The 11th of November, 1880, was the day that Ned Kelly was hanged. Interesting fellow, Mr. Kelly. Very varied reports regarding his importance. And I think that people need to remember is there was a political dimension to the Kelly story, which goes back to the 1854 Eureka Rebellion, which I'll talk about another day. Then obviously, yesterday was Remembrance Day, the day to mark Armistice Day, the end of World War One, which was basically fought by workers at either end of a bayonet for the glory of God, King and country. Huge death toll among Australian volunteers. 420,000 volunteered, 62,000 died on the European killing fields, another 60,000 died of their war wounds and gassing within 10 years of returning, and there were huge issues among many of the other veterans. So, and that was from a population of 5 million. So think about it. It's very easy to whip up hysteria, especially when you can identify the enemy. And it's very easy to get people to work for the good of the nation, when in reality, it's not the good of the nation that you're working for, that you're dying for, that your children are dying for. It's that for that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. It's a very simple equation. Very simple equation. Why would you bother defending the status quo against some enemy out there somewhere who you think is going to invade? And why would you die to protect the interests of somebody like the buffoon in Washington? Why would you bother? What's the point? And that's what people understood during the Vietnam War, the draft resistors, the people who said, hell, hell no, we won't go. Because they understood that this wasn't a struggle. This wasn't a struggle for peace. It wasn't a struggle against fascism. This was a struggle, you know, which was about maintaining those in power and those who had wealth in the position they were accustomed to. So, see, the thing is, you know, we're all, in many regards, we think of these brilliant battles in the past. These, you know, where you got soldier pitted against soldier, whether it's the medieval period, whether it's the 19th century, where you'd sit up on the hill and you'd watch the two opposing forces do battle and slaughter themselves while you're eating cucumber sandwiches, drinking tea, getting your manservant to polish your boots because they've got a bit of clay on them because you're on the cliff. Well, the fact is, as you and I know, as we saw in Gaza, as we see in Sudan, as we see in the Congo, as we see in the Ukraine, that modern warfare is about war which is conducted against non-combatants. I mean, the carpet bombing of Gaza in many ways parallels the carpet bombing of North Vietnam in 1972. were the civilians, and we're talking about 70,000 dying directly as a cause of the United States-Israeli in carnage, which has been carried out in Gaza in the last 2.5 years, and which has been carried out for the last 70 years at a lesser extent. But the fact is the major casualties are civilians. They're not armed combatants. And if you look at Ukraine, although you have a front line and you have Russian soldiers fighting against Ukrainian soldiers, the major casualties are civilians. And if it's not in terms of direct damage to them, in terms of injuries and death, it's about the ongoing damage to families and over generations because of the loss of so many important people in this circle. So civilians, when you look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it was civilians who were the main targets. When you look at Gaza and the fact that food and water and medicines have been used as a weapon, again, it's civilians that are the main target. And that's the issue about modern warfare. You can sit 10,000 kilometres away, push a button, play with your computer game, and hey, bingo, 10,000 kilometres away, kaboom. Lots of collateral damage. Lots of civilian deaths. So modern warfare is not about some sophisticated program of mutual destruction. Modern warfare is about laying waste the land, displacing civilians, and ensuring that civilians become the main casualties, not combatants on either side. Think about it. This is The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, the Community Radio Network. Now, I said, and obviously we've got the dismissal of the Whitlam-led Labor government on the 11th of November, 1975. Now, on Sunday, just a few days ago, we were involved in a little struggle that's been going on now for about 14 years. And that's the thing about struggle. It's not about having one huge mass demonstration and you go home and you watch it on TV or the net or live stream it and think, oh, woe is me, the wonderful things I've done. But as we saw with the Gaza protest, the Palestinian protest, it's about continuity. It's about constancy. Things don't change overnight. About 14 years ago, we discovered that Francesco Fantin, an anarchist living in Australia, who was an anti-fascist, an atheist, an anarchist, an anti-militarist, was murdered at Camp Loveday on the 16th of November, 1942. So what was Camp Loveday? It was an internment camp, not just for prisoners of war, but it was an internment camp for enemy aliens. So what is an enemy alien? An enemy alien is designated as somebody of a particular nationality, that somehow they're an enemy alien because of their nationality. And we saw thousands of Australians, who some had lived here for decades, been interned in internment camps across the country. From a population of less than 100,000, over 30,000 Italians were interned during World War II. And although Francesco Fantin had come here as a refugee from Mussolini's Italy, and although he'd been involved in anti-fascist campaigns almost for every year he lived here, he was arrested and placed in an internment camp which was run by fascists. And as he refused to give the Il Duce the salute in the morning, he was beaten to death by a 4B2 while he was bent over trying to get a drink from a tap. So we thought we'd go there and we'd, you know, honour him. Now, obviously, Armistice Day It's an important day in Italian history. It's a day that people remember the war dead. And when we went there, we found there was an ossuary, which is not a pile of bones, but there are 130 Italian internees and prisoners of war who had been died in internment camps. Some had been killed, some had died of disease, and they were brought together at Murchison, which is outside Shepparton, in this chapel which had been, the funds had been raised by the Italian community and built. But of the 130 in this chapel, 35 are internees, the rest are prisoners of war. And the internees include a woman and an 8-week-old child, and Francesco Fantine, and others, apolitical people who paid the ultimate price. And for years, we used to have a little ceremony at the side, at the end, to celebrate Fantine. Over the years, we formed a friendship with some of the returned soldiers who attended this. And we were told that we could march in the march on behalf of the internees. And let's not forget that many of us who go there do have had relatives who are now dead who were interned, not because they were fascists, but because they were Italian, right? This year, although we fought, everything had been arranged, we were denied permission to official permission to march. But we marched anyway, supported by one of the returned soldiers, we marched. And we were greeted by the crowd in a positive, we had a positive response from the crowd that was there, because they understood that it's civilians in that chapel, in that ossuary, who paid the same price as men who'd been conscripted to fight in World War II, who had no idea why they were being sacrificed, and other committed fascists. They understood. And next year we'll be marching officially. So that took time. Didn't happen overnight, but it took time. It was a struggle that took time. And all struggles take time. The abolition of slavery in the British Empire didn't happen overnight. Women obtaining the vote in England didn't happen overnight. The abolition of the White Australia policy didn't happen overnight. I know people get a little bit upset when they see Hitler's spawn, you know, march up and down calling for a White Australia. But let's not forget that 100 years ago, they were the majority. This was a nation which was built on the White Australia policy. But that changed. Let's not forget that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders lived the most marginal existence on the outskirts of communities, their children being taken away to be assimilated into wider society while we stroke the pillow of a dying race. And they survived, and they continue to survive and prosper. And questions regarding sovereignty continue to be raised over and over again. And that's because of struggle. It's not because of one massive demonstration, people walking over a bridge, you know, was it the year 2000 for reconciliation? A march of over 200,000 which ended in nothing. But it's about that constant battle not to be disillusioned, not to be pushed aside, not to be forgotten. And that's why we spend a lot of time in the Anarchist Media Institute highlighting important historical events and organising activities to mark those historical events. Because a people which doesn't understand its history has no mechanism by which to understand the present or move towards changing the future. We have no mechanism. See, I think there's a great... I love living in Australia, not because I was born here, because... See, the great thing about being an Australian, and you may find this offensive, is that when you wake up, it's the beginning of history. We have a great ability to deny the past in this country and to deny reality. And when we're confronted with reality in the past, we've got a great ability to just shrug it off and pretend as if nothing has happened and history began today. It's a little bit like the discussion regarding the Palestinian struggle for independence, right? Everybody, the way people talk, it's as if it all began on the 7th of October 2023 when Hamas broke out of the enclave in Gaza, the world's greatest prison, and slaughtered over 1,200 Israelis, despite the Israeli Defence Forces, despite Israeli intelligence, theoretically, no knowledge of what happened. What was going to happen? Quite extraordinary, quite extraordinary. We have no, we shrug our shoulders when we hear about truth-telling. It happened so long ago. What's it got to do with me? I came here as an immigrant. You can't blame me. Well, obviously, we all share the benefits. But that's what I'm saying is history, that's the past, is important. And we don't have many victories. And sometimes it takes decades to achieve a victory. And when that victory is achieved, other people, governments, institutions which have been opposing that change for decades have passed laws to oppose that change and to criminalise workplace activity like strikes and occupations and criminalise and marginalise people who are involved in protest movements. Take the credit for that change, and we see it over and over again. And that's why we need to take the credit for our victories. We need to celebrate those victories, and we need to ensure that those victories are not forgotten. If you ask most Australians today why they have access to a three-hospital system, a public health system, why they have access to Medicare, why they have access to a pharmaceutical benefits scheme, why they have access to a no-fault divorce scheme, why they may have access to legal aid, community health centres, although we've seen more and more of them close down, community radio, and the list goes on and on, legal aid, legal reform, native title, land rights. It all stems back to that period between 72 and 75 where the pressure for reform was so great that the government that was elected was hell-bent on redistributing wealth and passing legislation to ensure those who believe they were born to rule, those who manipulated the electorate to suit their short-term financial interests would be challenged and challenged directly. And 50 years later, it's important to remember those gains, because I'm old enough to remember the struggle for Medicare, or in those days it was called Medibank, for a universal health scheme. Every significant medical organisation in this country refused to support the introduction of a universal healthcare system. And the Whitlam-led Labor government had to go to a double disillusion election in 1974, which they won, in order to pass that legislation to introduce a universal healthcare system, which continues to have such a significant impact on people's lives
over 50 years later.
And that's what struggle is about. It's not about that Pyrrhic victory, which is irrelevant. It's about those changes which provide long-term benefits to people. And there aren't people who are promoting ideas, there will never be any change. I mean, I'm a great believer in buying or taking back the country, taking back this country's natural resources and using them for the good of everybody, not just a minuscule minority. I mean, that's why I'm the Secretary of Public Interest before corporate interests. And if you're interested, you can join online. That's right. Everything on the internet is obviously true, isn't it? You can join online. Go to PIBCI, PIBCI.net. So, people say, are you disillusioned? I say, no. Are you cynical? I say, no. Do you believe change is possible? I say, yes. And I say, yes, because I've seen change occur in this society. Although there may be elements which are dragging their feet, which refuse to, you know, acknowledge reality, as we've seen with the Liberal National Party with the net zero emissions schemes. The fact is that it doesn't matter what they think. It's reality that determines the course of events. And if we are able to articulate that reality to the people around us, we have that capacity to change the course of history in a way where we can devolve power and hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. YouTube channels, public interest before corporate interests, josephtoscano.nam, web pages, anarchistmedia.org. Public interest before corporate interest, pipsy.net. It just goes on and on. There's a lot of stuff there. And obviously it's on the internet. It must all be true. And I'm still waiting to find those little green men on Mars. If you know of any little green men on Mars, can you tell them to give me a call so I can actually interview them on Radical Australia. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of those good folk at the Community Radio Network. This program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Irrespective of where you're listening to this program in Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network, let your friends, let your enemies know about The Anarchist World This Week. Encourage them to listen and possibly, hopefully, maybe, just maybe, I am able to encourage you to get involved in actions to ensure that ideas become reality and we create that new world in our hearts. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.